Hello and welcome to
The Heart of Healing Show.
I'm your host, Natasha Slayton.
And I'm your co-host, Sophie Starr.
Join us each week as we explore the magic of alternative healing modalities, what they are, how they work, and the parts that have helped us.
We'll be interviewing world-renowned healers and experts within different fields.
All the while sharing personal stories of pain and perseverance. So tune in to tap into your true potential and learn with us as we dive into a world of possibilities.
Have some laughs.
And some cries. And ultimately, get to the heart of healing. Hello and welcome to another episode of the pod. We are so, so grateful that you're here hanging out with us. And on today's episode, we're going to be talking about the subject of cleansing and the effects that it has not only on the body, but also on the spirit and the mind. But before we dive into conversation, this is Natasha here, I'm wanting to add just a little bit to this intro post-conversation just to give a bit of extra clarification that I felt was important. So when we start talking about our initial motivations for cleansing, I mentioned that I was primarily cleansing for weight loss. And although my experience did escalate into that, my initial motivation was actually to address deep-seated and chronic health concerns, which cleansing can be very effective at addressing when done responsibly and mindfully. We also talk a bit about eating disorders in this episode, and we wanted to give a heads up to anyone who might need it. So that being said, joining us in this conversation is the incredible Joe Little, who is the owner and founder of an amazing philosophy called Creative Cleansing. So let's dive in.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's so lovely to be here with both of you and, you know, share my view and dive deep into this conversation.
Absolutely. I'm really stoked because I personally have had some experience with different types of cleansing. And I've had some positive experiences, some not so positive experiences. And I kind of just want to start the conversation off by asking you, what is cleansing as it applies to the mind, body, and spirit? And like, what are some of the effects it can have on all of those systems?
Well, I think that cleansing in the modern day has become predominantly a physical practice. And many people are using cleansing as a way to sort of push their bodies into, you know, whether it be weight loss or trying to force their bodies into acting in a certain way. And really, historically, cleansing has always been a practice to really help us to connect with the divine, to help us to really connect with our own strength inside ourselves and to really learn to bring in like spiritual nourishment and nourishment on a deeper level. So when we look at things like holistic psychology, we start to see that the way we think, the way we act, the way we eat, and the way we move here on earth all have an effect on our nervous system. So the idea behind this practice is to really integrate all of these different practices into the idea of the art of letting go, how to cleanse our nervous system, how to let go of the blockages in our lives that are holding us back so that we can create more space in our life to bring in the good things.
Oh, I love that explanation because it also just speaks so much to the fact that like cleansing is not something you just do like as a one-off. It's something that you can bring into your daily life on a regular, and it might not be in the, you know, standard sense of the word that, you know, when we think of cleansing as like the way we think of cleansing for the most part. But it's also interesting because for me personally, I've had, like I was saying before, like negative and positive experiences with cleansing. And I didn't consciously at the time realize that I was so much affecting like my spiritual body as well as my physical. Like I was getting all of these, this mental clarity and this increase in focus and creative ideas, but my fuel was definitely like to lose weight. Like that was my number one thing. And I ended up, I was telling Sophie cleansing for like seven and a half months out of a year and a half's time. But I wasn't, it like worked for me to lose weight at the beginning. And then all of a sudden my body system was shutting down because I wasn't doing it in a way that I needed. And it wasn't like with any type of guidance by a professional. It was just like me kind of saying, oh, that sounds good. Like I'll go for it. And it, because it worked for me at the beginning, like I'll just keep doing it. And it became like this addictive cycle.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly my story. And I think that it's an experience that many people are having because cleansing is so powerful. When you do a cleanse and you get to day three and you go over the slump, and then all of a sudden you have like this brightness and this lightness in your body that you feel so powerful, so strong. And you're like, oh my God, this is really good. This is really, you know, helping me to regenerate my brain cells. It's helping me to clear out toxins in my body. And I feel super powerful. So if a little bit is good, then if I do a lot of it, it must
yes.
be better.
Yes.
And that this is not an integrated way of working with cleansing. This is like a way of trying to kind of like dominate the body and try and force it into doing something. And in the end, the body will, you know, like a rubber band that gets pulled and pulled and pulled, at some point it will snap. And that was my own experience as well. I had some incredible regeneration happening with my brain, with my body, with cleansing. And so I did exactly the same. I thought, you know what, if little is good, I'll do a lot of it. And I pushed my body to such an extent that I ended up with adrenal fatigue and, you know, getting into sort of chronic fatigue and ending up sort of almost in bed and not being able to get out of bed and really starting to kind of then reevaluate, well, what is nourishment and how do I nourish myself? And, you know, then like, how do I find the middle way, the balanced way where I can kind of still use this as a tool to support my body, to release, to regenerate, but do it in such a balanced way that I can also learn and listen to my body and trust myself, that I know how to look after myself and I know how to nourish myself and I know how to support myself.
That's beautiful. I think like, as you're speaking about this and your experience with cleansing and maybe having an approach that you saw wasn't working initially and then seeing all the benefits when it's integrated properly, I've really only ever heard of like physical cleansing in the traditional sense, but you mentioned like spiritual and all, a host of emotional, you know, mental cleansing. And I'm so interested to know, are those separate things that we can cleanse? Is it one integrated cleanse that we can do? How does cleansing really work, or how is it intended to work?
Well, that's a really beautiful question, because I truthfully believe that the whole thing is integrated. And that when we're working on one part of us, we need to work on all parts of us. And so when I look at our nervous system, I see the nervous system like a web. And if you imagine like the spokes of the web, the points of all of it, if you start to tighten one point too much, then the whole shape gets dragged out of integrity. So it's important for us to focus on all of these different elements and continue to tighten, to strengthen the nervous system in many different ways, whether it be physical, whether it be emotional, whether it be mental. And so as we go round and we tighten each like edge, if you like, then we keep an integrated structure. We keep ourselves feeling very safe in all aspects of our life. Truthfully, if you think about cleansing, like in the history of cleansing and the way that cleansing has come to being in humanity, cleansing has been always a part of every spiritual tradition. Mm-hmm. Like since the dawn of time, there has been no organized spiritual practice that hasn't had some form of cleansing in it. If you think of Lent, you think of Ramadan, you think of Yom Kippur, Ekadashi, you know, the moon dance, the sun dance of the indigenous tribes, the dietas, you know, all of them have all asked us in some ways to purify ourselves, to make space, to cleanse, to have moments of stillness and coming back to our center so that we can, you know, really take the next wave of life that comes with us. Yeah.
Wow. That's beautiful. Yeah.
What are some of the benefits, both short-term and long-term, that could come from cleansing? Because there are a lot of people that I even personally know where they're like, I'm never going to do a cleanse. Like, that's just never going to happen. I don't have it in me. So I feel like, though, they might not know, you know, what the benefits are.
Yeah, I mean, the first one is obviously ridding our body of the toxins. You know, we store so many sort of like a backlog of toxins in our fat cells. And it's very difficult for our body to process, digest, and eliminate all of those toxins when we keep just adding to it all the time. And as we know, we come into countless chemical toxins every day of our life, more and more so in this modern world. And so, like, the cleaning of our cells is a really important part of it. What we do is we create something called autophagy when we go into the deeper fasts. And the deeper fasts are, you know, 5-day juice fasts, water fasts, extended periods of time. And what that is it basically means self-eating autophagy. That's what it means. And it's where our body will, when it doesn't have fuel, it will go around the cells and it will, like, scavenge and look for damaged or diseased cells in the body, and it will take them back to the lymph and break them down, like taking it to a recycling plant, if you like, and it will actually break down those damaged cells and start to kind of use them in other ways. So it's a good way for us to really clear out sort of like the damaged backlog or any kind of like precancerous cells that are in the body. It helps eat tumors, things like this, which is like really the goal that we're looking at when we're going on these deeper fasts, which is why we want to train our body to be able to feel safe in these gentler fasts so that we can embark on these journeys. Mm. The other things that when I started cleansing long time ago, maybe 20 years ago, it was really as a way to kind of increase my vitality, my performance level, to help me have longevity, to help me to feel better in my body, to give me better mental clarity, things like this. And I knew the effects of cleansing on the body, but after 2011 and the injury I had then, I went in to detox, to use fasting as a detox from a lot of pharmaceuticals that I was on at the time. And the effects that it had on my brain was outstanding. This was one of the things that really attracted me and really opened my eyes to kind of see the power of fasting. Because what it does is it stimulates the brain hormone BDNF, which helps to regenerate brain cells. And so we get mental clarity on a whole nother level when we're fasting. And although it might seem counterintuitive, it's actually very good for the brain.
Wow. Do you mind going into a little bit of your backstory? Because it's so profound. I don't know how much you're willing to share.
Yeah, I'm willing to share,
like,
everything.
It's so, so interesting. Yeah. And
yeah, I just want to say that also a few of the other really wonderful things that it can help,
yeah, of course.
help with is it can really help with regulating our blood sugar levels, with insulin resistance. It really helps to strengthen the heart. It's got so many different things that it can help with longevity as well. It's like, very good for our blood sugar levels. And so there's like so many different ways that it can help looking after our bodies. So like, I really want to say that the reason that I've stayed with cleansing and I've really made it a practice that is integrated into my life is because I've seen it help people with cancer. I've seen people totally reverse stage 4 cancer through cleansing. I've seen people with multiple sclerosis come in at the place that I worked at in wheelchairs and in 3 months walk out. I've seen people with liver psoriasis, with, their skin, you know, like very flaky skin. And within 3 to 6 weeks, I've seen it totally reverse. I've seen so many things happen with cleansing that is one of the reasons that even though sometimes it can have negative connotations. It is something that I feel like resets the system in the quickest way. It's the quickest way to bring me back to my center. And when I feel like I'm a little out of balance, I know that if I do a cleanse and that I do it intelligently and I do it with a lot of presence and awareness, that I know it's the best thing that can bring me back to my center and make me feel strong. So.
How often do you cleanse?
Now I cleanse once a month. I've tried many different fasting rhythms throughout my cleansing journey. Everything from intermittent fasting to fasting once a week. And personally myself, I find that intermittent fasting can cause a little bit of stress on my system. Like I don't feel so safe when I'm intermittent fasting. And, you know, it has brought up issues with my adrenals. So I've slowly extended and I've played about with doing it seasonally. And I find that once a month, a gentle fast once a month is a great way just to keep me in my center, to keep me in check, to like bring me back to my intentions. Where am I going? The little micro adjustments on the journey of life.
Do you, when you say once a month, do you mean like one day, one week, 3 days?
So I do one day. I basically do one day. I give it a 3-day window and
to wean on and off, sort of.
To wean on and off. And then I really listen within that 1-day window of like, you know, how long do I want to fast for? And I really allow myself to be guided. Sometimes I'll get to the 24-hour mark and I'll be like, I feel good. I want to do a little bit longer. And sometimes I'll go for 36 or 48. And then there's other times when maybe my energy feels a little bit depleted or I have a lot going on in my life. And my body after 20 hours says, I think I need a little something. So it's really, I've really tried to bring this idea of intuitive fasting and really listening to the body, honoring the body and learning to really help the body to trust me, you know, because I think that we, like you say, we override our body so oftentimes that our body doesn't know that it's safe in our own hands. And so I'm really trying to train my body to know, like, we're okay. And if you really need it, I'll be there for you and I'll feed you. So,
oh. So beautiful, because like you were saying before, it so quickly could become something that's more of an abuse.
Totally.
Type of thing, or, you know, like I had mentioned, it could become an addictive thing. So if we're not listening to our bodies and intuitively fasting, then that's when things can go wrong pretty quickly.
Yeah. I mean, we actually, oftentimes people, in order to fast or to cleanse, they check out, they disassociate from their body. And they say to their body, I'm not going to listen to any of the signals that you have for me. If you're screaming at me and you're telling me you're hungry, it doesn't matter. I'm day 3 and I've got to get to day 5. So you put yourself in, under such stress and disallowing your body. It's like a really negatively parenting. And so like we really want to learn to gently parent ourselves and our bodies so that our bodies can learn like, you know what, I can communicate and I can be heard, because so often our body is not heard. And then when we start to listen and we start to, you know, specifically with intuitive cleansing, where we actually use different liquids or you know, soups and smoothies even, we start to give our body the food and we start to hear it respond and we start to listen honestly to our body and we start to know like, oh, was that like, you know, the frustrated brat that wanted something. You know, like, or truthfully, did my body need something in that moment? And then you start to kind of learn, like, how can I care for myself and how can I really trust myself, you know?
Wow. So that's like where the fine line is then, right? Because like I think of almost beating myself into submission mentally, where it's like I have to be all or nothing. Like I've got to really go for it and like multiple days, or it's like I will just start throwing a temper tantrum in my mind of like, no, I'm hungry now and I can't do it.
There's a saying that I came up with, because it, like during birthing this process, I had to kind of go through a lot of that in myself as well. And what I came up with is, it's a compassionate negotiation to discipline the ego. and understanding that the compassionate negotiation is sitting with yourself and asking yourself, okay, do you need this? What part of you needs this? And sometimes, you know, sometimes we're working very hard and we're cleansing and, you know, the mind inside is screaming like, I need something. And you're asking yourself like, well, what do you need? And it's like, actually, I just need to lie down for 15 minutes. And you know, in fact, sometimes what we're doing is we're saying, no, you can't lie down. So in fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you something sweet to try and force you to continue. Mm. And, you know, that's not listening to ourselves. That's overriding ourselves. And so we're really starting to kind of use this process, this cleansing, this intuitive cleansing as a tool to open up a dialogue with our bodies and use that dialogue as a way to be able to learn to trust ourselves and learn to hear what's actually happening inside and build this safe relationship. Because oftentimes we maybe didn't have safe parent relationships and safe personal, you know, relationships. And then our relationship with ourselves has become disordered. So it's about rebuilding that trust, rebuilding that relationship. And just like you do if you've been with a long-term partner who's maybe cheated, and then you learn to rebuild the relationship with them, it's also a process. So it's like you've also done that. You've cheated on yourself, you know, with the way that you've been acting. And it's about a chance to show up for yourself and to let yourself know that you're there looking after yourself and you can trust yourself.
That's extremely profound. Yeah, tying in this element of like really a chance to, I like that you said like gentle parenting of our bodies, because like Natasha was saying, I can relate so much to beating my body into submission and really like, you know, for lack of a better word, abusing myself in so many ways for the sake of health or what have you, and not really understanding why there was all this resistance and where I wasn't meeting myself in the middle. And I'm curious on a technical level too. So with the fasting, like for you, for example, it's the one day, you know, maybe a 3-day window leading up to it. So in that period, is there like water being had? Is it consuming nothing? Like what are the kind of technicalities of a fast?
Yeah, so it's actually intuitive cleansing. So,
oh, sorry.
So. So, I mean, you know, we're building up to learning how to fast. And, you know, fasting in some ways, you know, you can do a technology fast, you know. You can do a judgment fast, you know. You can do a sugar fast. You can do a coffee fast. So, you know, like understanding, first of all, what are your own parameters and what are your own intentions? Because it is an intentional practice, mm-hmm. and it's about you trying to work out like what are your reasons for doing this and how do you want to support yourself? So with intuitive fasting and the rhythm ritual, which is like my monthly offering, the way that we work is each month you decide what your liquids are going to be, and they can be anything from, you know, the nourishing herbs, which can be like nettles, oat straw, burdock, things like this, which are your infusions. And then you can also bring in, like, you know, it's spring, so bringing in nice green juices and nutrient-rich juices, broths, bone broths. We also do a lot of like seasonal broths. So at the moment we're doing a lot with like a Thai broth. And in the winter it's more like bean broths and things like this. And then also like bringing in like a fat rich drink. So like a nut milk or a nut latte or something like this that allows your blood sugar levels to stabilize as well. And then you start to play with the idea around macronutrients and how they feel in your body. And so it's about when you feel the hunger arising, like learning, where does this hunger live inside my body? Like, is this something that is arising because my body, my cells needs fuel, Or is this arising like many of us have when I'm bored, I'm frustrated, I'm upset, I feel like lonely, I feel sad, I feel not good enough, whatever those emotions are, and can they be fed elsewhere? So then starting to learn that there are different ways and different hungers that live inside us and different ways to feed those hungers as well, we ask those questions before we put something in our mouth. And so we take a pause. And when we take a pause, we start to listen and we start to give our body space to communicate to us, to tell us what it needs. Personally, myself, one of my biggest nourishments is my little pit. Her name's Mystic, and she's like the best cuddler in the world.
Divine doggy.
She is amazing. And she's like one of my best forms of nourishment. When I have those moments throughout the day, moments of overwhelm, moments where I can feel my nervous system getting a little bit tense, I check in, like, what do I need? And I try and feed myself in other ways first. And then once I've hydrated myself and I've checked in with my other hungers, I will then go to the refrigerator and I'll say to myself, okay, body, what do you need right now? Like, how can I support you? And sometimes that might be like, I want something uplifting and refreshing and brightening, and that will be a green juice, or even maybe a green juice with a little bit of apple, or maybe an apple cider vinegar drink. Or I feel a little bit, my nervous system feels a little bit frazzled, and maybe I need something a little bit more grounding, like a nut milk or a nut latte or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or I can feel that my body feels depleted and I need minerals. And then that would be something more like the broths, the mineral broths or the shilajits or things like this. So it's like really starting to, and you can't get it wrong. The amazing thing is it's all an exploration, a way to kind of, you don't just drink something and then get on with it. You ask the questions, you approach the drinks with a lot of awareness in your body, sometimes even like picking up each one and listening to what happens in your body, because that's how I actually, came up with this, how this practice kind of evolved for me, was really being more in the kind of like right brain, like sensorial approach to relating to food, like touching the food, like holding it, like, as body, is this what you want right now? And then listening, like, if the body wanted to receive that, and then drinking it, and then sometimes realizing that the signals might have come out a little bit wrong, like, oh, I actually, that wasn't the best thing for me in the moment. Then journaling about it, writing about it, learning about it, using it as a practice for us to explore and understand, because, ultimately we are the greatest authority in our life. We have the most amount of intelligence about what our body needs. And the more that we can start to empower ourselves to really know ourselves, the less we check out of our own awareness and start to say, oh, well, this person said that I should be drinking this at this time of night. And it might work for them incredibly. But I truthfully believe that inside each one of us is an incredibly intelligent being that knows how to nourish and nurture ourselves.
All of that talk was making me really thirsty. Oh my gosh. I just had to like reach for
I couldn't agree with any of that more. It's so interesting that we're talking about this, and with the intuitive cleansing, just like really becoming familiar with our bodies, maybe again or for the first time. Yeah. And as you're talking, I'm realizing it's funny. Natasha and I were speaking before the show about, I can identify that. I think for a long time, food was like a coping mechanism, a way to stuff emotions. And then, as that progressed, and then my journey through purging the food, that was like a way to release these stuffed emotions. It was like I wasn't allowing food to be what it was. I was attaching it to, it was a way to act out my emotions in a safe way, even though it wasn't safe, but it was the only strategy that I had to stuff my emotions and then release my emotions. Yeah. And it's very much something I'm still working on, my relationship with food and being present while I eat and not wanting to rush the process. And I felt so much relief hearing you discuss, like, oh my gosh, sometimes it's just about pausing and taking a moment and saying, like, what do I actually need? Because in such an anti-rest culture, like, you know, God forbid I take a nap instead of, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, I want to say that sometimes our crutches save us. So, like, whatever we go through in life, you know, whatever wild journey, whatever coping mechanism we chose, like, they helped us cope. So it's okay. Because there could have been other options that we take that would have been more damaging for us. And in the long run, being able to cope and being able to get to where you are today, where you are unfolding and growing, is amazing, because there's many people that haven't got to this place and many people that have chosen more damaging, you know, crutches. And it's, I just want to make it okay for all of us to go through our life experience, because without it, we don't learn and we don't grow. So just like the ultimate compassion that we have for our human experience, anybody who's in a body is going through something. Like, I'm in amazement the more and more I learn about people. And I think that we all keep what's happened to us very private. And we try to put on this facade that we're this, like, you know, perfect healed person. But truthfully, if we're alive, we're not healed.
Exactly.
Right.
Because we're here to learn. So we're still in school. We're still growing. We're still learning. And I think that, you know, especially when we battle with food, it's a very difficult thing, because food is the ultimate nourishment. It's the thing that's meant to save us. It's the thing that was meant to make us feel safe and secure in our lives. It's our lifeblood, literally. If we don't eat and we deprive ourselves, then it's inevitable that we're, you know, gonna die. Mm-hmm. So, I think that many people in this day and age have disordered eating relationships, even if it's like orthorexia that we see today, like people who have unhealthy relationships with healthy food, who have neurosis around food, you know, they're just down to like eating and having judgment around food. Like, there are so many different ways that we're abusing, like, what is the greatest gift in our lives, you know, like, Mother Earth has given us all the fruits. She's given us all the vegetables. She's given us all the herbs, all the medicines, all the things to help and heal us. And us in our neurosis are getting it all mixed up and not knowing how to just slow down, be present, ask ourselves what we need, and trust that we can give it to ourselves. And it's challenging when we know that we have abused that relationship and abused that gift, and it's come from a place that we haven't felt good inside ourselves. And so it isn't about learning to be stronger. Okay, like, it's not about like you should be stronger and you should be able to do better. It's about like what's underneath that. So like, what's underneath the healing that needs to be supported. And that's where the emotional cleansing and the spiritual cleansing comes into action, because there are layers upon layers in the unseen world of things that we don't really understand and don't really know and we don't really take into account, because we very much live in the physical. And so when we can start to include those in our cleansing practices, then we can start to feel, like you say, the stuffing down of emotions, the eating to try and keep everything down, and then the purging, which like helped you to release Like that was a lot of like the emotional aspect that's actually trapped in your physical body, that you're actually helping to try and move that through yourself. And so I want to honor you for your experience, and also tell you that I think that you're really brave for even opening up this conversation, because I think it's, you know, something that's so needed. I think that so many of us are having this situation and not talking about it. And I'm pretty sure that there's a lot of Instagrammable babes out there that are hiding situations that they're not willing to talk about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said before I came on this interview with the both of you, that I'd be happy to go as deep and as raw as you want, because I think that it's important for us to be able to speak honestly and openly about the truth and the uncomfortability behind healing.
Oh my gosh. I really love that you said, you know, it's not about being strong. It's like, it's really doing the opposite. It's mm-hmm. like being vulnerable.
Totally.
That's where the healing takes place. But I also wanted to ask, because like I'm studying Ayurvedic medicine right yes. now. And so we talk about like prakriti, like the body's constitution by nature. And then also like the vikriti, which is like the imbalance, or that which, you know, how you're vitiated from your prakriti. And so when we talk about intuitive eating, a lot of the professors and doctors of Ayurveda will acknowledge that oftentimes we are doing that based on our imbalance or vikriti. So it's that much more important to become in tune with ourselves, because the old me hears you saying that and almost takes it as permission to be like, okay, my body needs M&Ms, let's go eat that. You know what I mean?
Okay, so you just hit the nail on the head. Like honestly, like this is why, like, you know, because intuitive eating has come, it's like, you know, made this like upsurge, and everyone's like, intuitive eating, okay, that means cookies for breakfast, personally. And like, my body needs chocolate, you know? And it's like, okay, maybe. maybe there is a moment in your monthly cycle where a little bit of dark chocolate might support you. But like you say, sometimes our stresses can be something that we perpetuate. And so when we break this cycle through intuitive cleansing and we wipe the slate clean and we create spaciousness in our enteric nervous system, like what we're doing is, because oftentimes what can happen is we can have like bacterial balance imbalances in our microbiome. And our bacteria can be saying like, feed me this, feed me this, like don't stop feeding me this, because this is what's keeping me alive. And then as we move out of that, and we take sugar out of our diet, for instance, we can have like a die-off, and that die-off can cause us to feel like groggy, uncomfortable, like foggy, not feel so well, and it can feel uncomfortable in our system. And then we can have a little bit of sugar and it can, I feel all good again. And so like that is false intuition. Like that's our body tricking us into thinking that we need something that we don't, or like the emotions tricking us into seeing something that we don't. So when we do intuitive cleansing, what we're doing is we're creating spaciousness in the body. We're cleansing ourselves of all of those. We're taking ourselves down incrementally, like bringing ourselves into more wholesome foods, taking out processed sugars, and then we create this spaciousness. And this spaciousness in the body helps our enteric nervous system, which is our gut brain, kick in. And then we can start to ask ourselves clear questions about what our body needs. And more often than not, we will start to kind of like hear that our body wants more greens, or our body wants more protein, and we can start to work from that place. But if we just start intuitive eating without cleaning our body and without creating the spaciousness in our gut brain, then oftentimes this will happen, and we will say like, actually no, like carbs are really good for me, and like I really want cheese sandwiches, that's like definitely like the thing that's like sustains me, when when oftentimes that's causing like stress in the body. And then, like, you know, as you probably know, we can be addicted to that stress, and that we want to keep ourselves in the fight or flight response because it is like the normal for us. Mm-hmm. And so about kicking in the parasympathetic nervous system by dropping us down, creating spaciousness and giving ourselves a window of time to have stillness, then our nervous system will be able to recalibrate and we'll be able to listen to ourselves a little bit better.
I experienced that firsthand when I was 18. I had C. diff, which is an overgrowth of candida in your gut, and I was hospitalized. And the only thing I could even consume was bread because those bad bacteria were screaming for like yeast and sugars and all of that. And it was like it felt like beyond a craving. It was like I had to have it. And so, kind of speaks to what you're describing with the gut brain of like tricking us into thinking this is what I really need, but sometimes it's really not.
Yeah, I mean, we need that space. That's, you know, like I also, coming from disordered eating, like I was really trying to not over restrict. And so like a lot of the practices around intuitive eating were like, I felt intelligent, but I felt like that there was like a missing link for me, like that, which was exactly this, was if I don't clean my gut out and I don't periodically like attend to, just like you showered today, right?
Yes. Both of you.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
And you showered yesterday.
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you'll probably shower tomorrow. And people say, well, when are you going to stop cleansing? And it's like, well, you know, like our bodies like have these buildups. And so that's why we periodically want to clean ourselves out again. And so just like we would clean our outer body, we want to periodically like clean our inner body as well. And just learn that we, you know, like it builds up, it gets dirty, it has a buildup, we clean it. Just like at the outside of our body, we get sweaty, we take a shower. And so like the same with our internal system. And it's just about learning what the fasting rhythm or the cleansing rhythm that works for you, that doesn't stress out your adrenals and allows your nervous system to feel safe and settled.
Beautiful. I know it depends on the type of cleanse you do, but I'd love to talk about the importance of like preparing for a cleanse and also coming off of one, because there's that notion that like, okay, I did a 3-day cleanse, like now I'm gonna binge on food, and then you're shocking your organs and causing more trouble to your system than you would have had you not cleansed at all.
Yes. The refeeding process is actually one of the biggest parts of what I teach is like the refeeding process is like the most important part. Like they say, any fool can make a cleanse, but it takes a genius to break a cleanse. Because if we don't learn to integrate and introduce foods back into the diet, and especially if you're doing like, you know, a 5-day water fast, you know, there's a very specific protocol that's needed, like in the ways that you introduce different foods into your diet. You know, first of all, want to start with, something to break the ketosis, like a fruit heavy juice. And then you would bring in like fruits, like actually like eating like a smoothie, and then you'll start to bring in vegetables, and then you'll start to bring in cooked vegetables, and then you start to bring in some starches, and then you can start to bring in like a bean or a protein or something like that, not a meat protein, but a vegetable protein. So there's a specific way that we start to, and what that does is that actually helps to bring up, build up the flora in our gut as well, because it's very important for us. And for me specifically, I have a lot of sensitivity around sugar and bacteria. We haven't spoken about my story, but we will.
We will. We have to.
Which happened during my recovery, and my gut became very sensitive to sugars. So anytime that I eat sugar, I get a lot of like bloating. I get like big plumes of bacteria that cause a lot of like uncomfortability. It also causes a lot of like skin stuff if I eat sugar, and emotional like imbalances as well. So I actually like have a little bit of sugar if I'm doing a long fast. I will try to stay off sugar for as long as possible, and I'll only use it to bring me out of ketosis.
Even fruit sugar?
Even fruit sugar.
Do you want to take this moment to tell us a little bit about your backstory?
Yeah, sure. So I was like, many years ago, I was in the music industry, and I had, very, very fast life, very exciting, very enjoyable. I toured and traveled a lot, and I had a very stressful job. And in 2011, I had a ruptured brain aneurysm, which put me into a coma for 6 weeks. And during the 6 weeks, it was very touch and go for the first 3 or 4 weeks. I flatlined. I was paralyzed down the right side of my body. My heart collapsed. I had about 8 strokes. When it happened, when my husband took me to hospital, they actually, after 8 hours of surgery, they came back and gave my husband our wedding rings and asked him if he wanted to see a priest, and basically said that the chances of my survival were very, very slim, and if I did survive, that they didn't really know what would be left of me, kind of thing. And he stayed by my bedside for 6 weeks. And when I did come out, I was massively brain damaged. I was kind of like a 3-year-old. So I, you know, really wasn't that compos mentis. I had paralyzed vocal cords. So I found it very difficult to speak. I couldn't swallow. And so I had a peg fitted, a gastro peg fitted, so that I was feeding through a tube in my belly, for about 4 months. And, I learned to speak, I learned to walk, I learned to talk. And it probably took about 6 years, I would say, to rebuild back my brain to a point where I could hold down a conversation. Oh. Where I could remember things, where I knew where I was. It was quite a journey. It was quite a journey.
6 years.
6 years.
I only knew part of that. I did not know the full extent. And had you previously, can I ask what brought on, the brain aneurysm? Do they know? Is it?
Stress and lifestyle. I mean, it's hereditary. My grandmother's sister had died of an aneurysm, but I was 33, Christ year. So yeah, that was definitely a moment.
The biggest gift.
Yeah. Actually, it's so funny. People say to me, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, I'm not. I went through, wow, what I experienced, the things that I went through that whole process have taught me so much. Have given me a perspective that I could have never learned from any book, that I could have never have understood had I have not gone through that. It's made me understand the nervous system in such a way, which is why I approach this work through the nervous system. It's helped me to understand the centers of the body, the diaphragms. It's helped me to really work and understand, how we're supported and how we learn, So
being with you now, it's so hard to even believe that that's something that you experienced, because the work you're doing is incredible. The way you hold yourself, the way you speak, the things you do in the world. I mean, what? Okay, so was there any? Okay, I don't even. I'm speechless.
No, I know. I mean, because to me, 11 years since the. I mean, that really doesn't seem from where you were coming out of, regaining consciousness to now. I mean, that seems honestly not that long of a time to cover that much ground.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm like very, very inspired by you and your story and just having, because like you're saying, I mean, I would never imagine that that, I'm speechless.
What did some of your journey entail like after this? Had you previously, before this happened, had you previously been into holistic and spiritual medicine or cleansing, or is this something that you found afterward? Like, where did this lead you to?
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely interested in cleansing. Like, I was on the detox retox cycle. I mean, that was for sure. Like, you know, like, oh, January's coming. I used to, you know, I was on the road touring with bands, and I was like, you know, January's coming. There's not much going on. I think I'm going to go to Thailand, get myself a good body, lie on the beach for a bit, like, try and repair myself so that I can get back out there again. And so I knew, and I was definitely like, I've always had a strong connection to spirit, even from like a little girl. I was like, I remember coming home and saying, I believe in God and I'm a Christian. Like, my mom was like, okay. So I've always had it in me, but I was definitely on a different path and definitely had a different calling. But I was definitely spiritually curious and very interested in holistic practices. And I wanted to get into the healing arts, but I was always like, oh my God, there's one more amazing gig. There's one more job. There's one more thing. And I've always said that I'm kind of like a learn on the job kind of person.
Mm.
And so I think spirit was like, oh, you want to learn on the job? You want to learn on the job? And you want to learn about healing arts? I've got just the job for you.
Oh my gosh.
So be really careful what you wish for, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think this is, you know, I always think to myself that maybe I was just on the wrong path, going in the wrong direction, and that this was kind of like a little bit more than a nudge from the universe to kind of like just reorientate myself. And I really have taken that opportunity. And I think that it's been one of the things that's made me realize that the brain isn't the controlling factor in our mind. It's our processor. Because even when my brain was totally offline, the level of strength in my spirit, I knew was coming from my heart. When I was in hospital and I woke up, I thought I was being held hostage. And I remember fighting with so much strength, like a warrior, that I was not going to give up. And that kind of energy transferred into my recovery as well. Like when I took something on and I put myself forward and I knew that I was going to recover, like I could feel like this like tugging in my heart, that it was like taking me and driving me towards where I was going. And even when sometimes I feel tired in my nervous system or tired in my body, I do my best to allow myself to recuperate, to regenerate, but I know that I have to get back up and move on, because I know that there's somewhere that my heart, my spirit wants to go, and my body needs to be along for the ride, because I think it's non-negotiable. Mm. It's what I feel in my being.
Taking it all of that into consideration, and also like how much you're probably still affected in so many different ways, and we've already talked about like physically and how you're affected by food. When it comes to cleansing, is there a specific day or set of days each month that like you know it's the end of the month, so it's coming, or do you also try to feel out like what feels right for you and your needs at the time?
Well, I've been playing about with it in different ways, and the way that I see is like our nervous system is a part of a much larger nervous system, which is the planet and the universe, and that all of these nervous systems kind of fit together, and that there are rhythms within these nervous systems. And so when we can kind of align our fasting practice to one of these rhythms, we can feel supported on, and then when we open up and we let go, we can actually feel the support of the moon, the sun, the earth. We can actually feel like we're not holding it all of ourselves. And it actually makes it, for me, it makes it a lot easier because it allows me to kind of give it over in some way. So I'm actually fasting with the moon.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be my next question.
Yeah.
Is that how you would say someone else should go about it too? Because like, do you have to like have a rest day? I would imagine you kind of do.
Yeah. I mean, it is advantageous to when you're going to have your cleansing day, your fasting day, that you clear space so that you can listen. Because if you're just rushing around in your normal everyday life, then it's very difficult to actually hear what your body's asking you to do. Or if you can hear, like respond to it. So I do think it is great to be able to have like a moment. And I personally like to choose like a window. So it's like around the full moon or around the new moon, depending upon what feels good to you on your moon cycle. Right. Like some women, personally myself, I prefer cleansing when I'm ovulating to when I'm menstruating.
So that you can like release everything when it comes.
Yeah. I just feel stronger in my body. I don't feel so depleted. So I actually feel more empowered cleansing when I'm ovulating than I do when I'm menstruating. So but like some people might feel different, like, and that's the great thing about it. That's the whole point of like listening to your intuition and starting to learn, like, oh, observing, like, what are these rhythms, how do they work within me, and how does cleansing affect that rhythm, and is it supportive or is it depleting? And then observing, journaling, listening, and adapting so that you know that this is working for you and your specific rhythm.
What would you say to someone who might be go, 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 and like they might be reluctant to carve out that time for themselves?
I would say that sometimes our biggest challenges are our greatest gifts. And so if we can learn to slow down, I mean, they say, don't they, it's like everybody should meditate for 20 minutes a day, unless you're busy, and then it should be an hour.
Yeah. I love that so much. I love that.
So I would say, like, I would always encourage people to just say, try it a few times, like not just once, but try it three times. Do it for a season, do it for 3 months, and see how it changes your body, see how it changes your approach to food, using food as like a meditation and your body as a guidance system to be able to kind of like support you. Sometimes you need to like clean something a few times so that your instrument is like has a little bit more clarity. Sometimes you can get more done when you come into the rest and relaxation mode, when you slip into your parasympathetic state. You'll find yourself more productive and more able to take on life's challenges. And so sometimes like the rhythm is everything. And so like we can't just be on all the time. And so like if we can like allow this pendulum swing to allow us to take us back into the parasympathetic state where we can rest, digest, relax and recover, then on the next uptake we'll be able to go further, go stronger. And just like life is an experiment.
Absolutely. So how can someone begin this journey if they've never embarked on intuitive cleansing or anything, or if they're listening to this and want to, you know, work with you, or, you know, where's a good starting place for somebody?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of information on my website, which is creativecleansing.com. and Creative Cleansing on Instagram as well. We actually have a monthly program which is called Lunar Rhythm Ritual, which is really an invitation for people to explore intuitive cleansing. It gives you all the tools. It gives you sort of like an insight into the philosophy. We also have like self-care rituals. We have a ritual for the lunar cycle that helps you to kind of like get more in touch with where we are on like the yearly cycle, so that we can start to kind of understand like what practices are best going to serve us in this moment, like this month, as we're in April. It's all about, you know, cleansing your environment. Spring cleaning is something that we've always done. So how do we cleanse our home so that we can create a space for and call in the things that we want for this year? So yeah, the Lunar Rhythm Ritual is something that gives so many tools, practices, meditations, recipes, and insights into the way that we can really bring this intentional practice into our life so that it can be integrated into our world so that we can really nourish ourselves on all levels.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing so much with us and such valuable information. I really want to do a cleanse
now. Me too.
Like, it's been some time and I feel like I'm really ready to do this in a way that is loving to my body and to my spirit.
Yeah, well, I would love to invite you both. I'd love to gift you both a season.
Oh my gosh, what? Jo, thank you.
Of course, like, you know, and just know that like throughout it as well, like, you know, I'm on hand, so I'm always there to support and guide, and I'd love to gift you both like 3 months so that you can like be in the process with me.
Thank you so much. I am fully on board for this. Same. And you know, we'll be documenting it.
Yes.
All of my cranky food outbursts that I'm like, I want this. Yeah. No, I'm really excited to sit with myself and I'm really, truly honored. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm excited.
Welcome. I'm thrilled.
And nervous. Well, thank you to everyone for tuning in with us today. Thank you, Jo. If you are interested in cleansing in any way, please just consult someone who knows what they're doing in a loving way. Definitely consult with Jo. If you guys have any questions or feedback, like, let us know. And is there anything else that you want to add? I didn't ask you that.
No, I think that's everything. I had a really wonderful conversation with you both. Thank you so much for trusting me. I know this is a really sensitive subject and I'm really glad that we can all have such an honest and deep conversation, and I've really enjoyed, it. So thank you.
Thank you.
I feel likewise, Jo. Oh, yay.
Hi, Natasha here again. So after the first part of our conversation with Jo, we actually wanted to go a bit deeper into the process of refeeding after a cleanse. And of course, when we started talking about that, we ended up talking about a bunch of other things related to cleansing. And honestly, I just had no idea where to place this extra bit into the recording. So I'll just be pasting that part here. And I hope you enjoy the rest of the conversation.
Yeah, I'd really love to dive deeper into the refeeding process and why it's so important to make sure that our body feels safe and that we don't just go off on a binging tangent, like once we've finished like our cleansing process, and that we make sure that our body feels safe after we've been through a cleansing process. What we want to make sure is that we eat regularly, so that we make sure that we don't try to slip in, oh, well, maybe I can just like extend my morning breakfast for a little bit longer. We want to make sure that the body feels safe straight away after cleansing. So this will be about nourishing ourselves with lots of healthy foods, making sure that we're bringing in, it's a process, right? So we bring in the fruits, then we bring in the vegetables, then we bring in the grains, then we bring in the vegetable proteins like beans. And once we've done that, then our body feels sort of like safe and it's repopulated all of the bacteria, and we want to make sure that during the feeding part of the month that we don't deprive ourselves. So we make sure that we're hungry, that we feed ourselves, and that we don't end up accidentally fasting, because I think that lots of people think, oh well, I haven't eaten for, you know, 12 hours, that's good, right? That means I'm intermittent fasting. But we want to make sure that outside of the cleansing process that we are nourished, that we're safe, that we feel good.
Is there any type of special preparation we need to do before a cleanse?
So what's going to make it easier for the cleansing process is if we incrementally come down. The way that we want to fast is we want to almost think about it like, instead of like jumping off of the cliff into the sea and then trying to fight your way back to the shore again, we want to kind of like walk down the beach, gradiate into the water, and then come back out again. So we want to make sure that we're taking out of processed foods, processed sugars, taking down our salt content, and then just slowly, incrementally bringing down like our portions, so that our body starts to feel better with being empty. Personally, myself, what I like to do is before a cleanse, I like to up the fats a little bit and take out the sugars, so that my body feels safe without the sugar. And then I slowly bring down the fats and bring up all of like the roughage, the vegetables, so that then my body feels good with a lot of fiber in my body. I like to make sure that I bed down my tummy, which means like taking out any meat proteins, things like that, things that can sometimes, if they sit inside the tummy for too long, can sometimes go putrid. So we want to make sure that we cleanse everything out with a lot of fiber before we approach a fast of any kind. And then incrementally on the way back again, we want to be slowly bringing in like some of these foods before we bring in any, you know, not that we really should go back to processed sugars anyway.
Yeah, no.
but like, we want to make sure that that's one of like the last things that we bring in, because it does cause aggravations with bacteria. And also a huge part of my work is around presence, around food. So eating should be a meditation. So it's like really like one of the biggest things that we can do is slow down our eating process and really sort of like start to have an experience with our food. So we call it like cephalic phase digestive response. It's the head form of eating, right? It's like we look at our food and our brain already knows, okay, I'm about to receive this. We smell what we're eating and our pancreas starts to produce the enzymes. So our digestion starts before it even gets into our mouth, and then our saliva starts to break our food down. So we want to work with these processes during our refeeding process, after our cleanse. We want to make sure that we approach the food, approach the plate with a lot of like calm energy. And we take bites, we chew, we make sure that we're assimilating our food really well. And then we eat with maybe some silence, maybe even eating alone or outside, so that we can really be present with what we're eating, so that we can start to understand our fullness cues. Putting our knife and fork down during the plate and during our dinner, and asking ourselves when we've eaten half of our meal, like, you know, how full am I? Am I 20% full, 30% full? You know, like how full do I feel? And then giving ourselves a minute, and then we can start to eat a little bit more. So it's like really is like the most important part of the refeeding process is speed, I would say, because I think we've all done it where we don't eat for a while and then we eat out of panic and mm-hmm. then we eat with a lot of like haste. Mm-hmm. And then all of our awareness goes offline and we end up eating more than we want to, and then we feel uncomfortable afterwards. So speed is such a huge part of the refeeding process.
So glad you mentioned that. Thank you for breaking all of that down and covering all the bases. I really feel like I have a grasp on, you know, it's so much more than the cleanse day. You know, it's really like kind of, I mean, in that sense, you know, it's like every day is kind of a part of the cleanse in its own way, you know, leading up and coming out.
Yeah, I mean, it should, like, there should be like micro moments, like in your life, there should be micro moments. And when, especially if we start to look as eating as one of those like micro moments to check in with ourselves, to bring presence, to bring ritual, to bring practice into our life, then we can kind of like set the table. Like have a moment, like honor the food. Oh my God, like what has it taken for this food to get to my plate? Where did this food come from? And then we start to really kind of like settle into our body. We start to kind of like ground, and then we can kind of like have reverence for our food. Every mouthful becomes like a meditation. We have silence, and then we can start to look at our food as rather than a threat, which sometimes like we can have a panic around food. Like, oh my God, I've got to eat. And then it becomes almost like an internal argument. We start to slow it down, and really like eating speed is going to be such a huge factor of this process that's going to help us to come back into safety with our body around food. Yeah.
Oh, we were just talking about that. Yeah. Literally right before you got here, like food presence and slowing down.
Yeah, I mean, a huge part of my work is that. I mean, we touched on such a small part. I feel like we could do like several of these.
But
like,
I mean, hey, come back
and
anytime.
Joel, thank you so much for gifting us a season. Like, I'm serious. Oh, I really feel like after speaking with you, I'm really excited to have dinner tonight and really just experiment with like, what if I get a little more present with my food? You know, maybe I'm not all the way there, but just explore. You know, it doesn't have to be this thing that I have to hurry up and get over with. And that's, if anything, like after talking with you, I see how that's making it worse.
Yeah, food is not your enemy. Food is your best friend in the world. And it's not the food that is bad, and it's not you that is bad. Like, it's like a coping mechanism that's happened. And so if you can start to re-educate yourself and then start to kind of like bring like presence and awareness into your eating experience, and like, you know, like be in your root, be in your base all the time. Like when you're eating, notice your seat. Like where you're sitting. Because like you're like, oftentimes what happens is like when we become safe, we come, our energy comes up, and we actually want to bring our energy down. We want to take big belly breaths when we're eating. Like, you know, if you imagine your belly is like a furnace, so it's like, you know, you take food in and you actually then want to like breathe and bring air into your belly, because like that will start to help the metabolism. And so like you want to kind of like just slow down, take breaths, really like be with your process, like taste your food, don't check out of it. I still find myself in moments of panic when I'm eating, like I, you know, something's happening like in my life, and like my mind goes off, and then I'm like, oh my God, I'm eating super quick. Yeah. And then I'm like, okay, stop, put your plate down. Put your fork down. Breathe for a second. Be in my body and just tell my body I'm safe. And like I'm safe and I'm okay and whatever's going to happen. And that this food, I'm taking this food in to nourish me and to support me, and that I'm grateful for it. Because like what happens is, I think that I don't know what has happened with you, but like sometimes like the anger or the frustration in myself or whatever it is can cause like this eating to almost feel a little bit aggressive.
Yes.
And like the aggression then starts to run away, and we just have to like break the cycle, and we just have to stop it. So put it down. I am safe, and I'm eating this out of an act of love for my body. Like, this is not like I am not going to terrorize myself with something that needs to be so nourishing, you know?
Right.
I mean, you see it with women with you know, with sex. Like, you know, women are, you know, like so deprived of love in their life that they're like reaching for something that that now feels torturous inside their bodies, because they're like performing it in a way that doesn't have any reverence, that isn't slow, that isn't careful, that isn't safe. And so like there's all of these practices that are actually really life-giving to us, like making love, like eating, like these should be like the most nurturing things that we should be doing in our life, that we should be celebrating them. And it's just really,
And not like, I don't know what to do, let me run away as fast as I can from it or try to convolute it in some way, because,
There's a part in us, like there's our inner child, there's a part of us that isn't seen, isn't heard, isn't cared for. And we as an adult are not gentle parenting that inner child. We're thinking that that part of us is wrong also. And so we're perpetuating like the energy that like was maybe presented to us when we were younger or something that happened. And it's really about breaking that cycle so that we as adults can parent our inner child and make ourselves feel safe. But we have to cut it off. We have to, like, and that's what the cleansing is, like, not a way to fix us because we're not broken. Right. It's like a disruptor. It's like a way to kind of like draw a line and say to ourselves, like, okay, stop for a minute. Listen to ourselves, look after ourselves, like go back to the earth, like do our monthly ritual, like honor where we are in the cycle, like listen to ourselves, sleep, rest, take care of ourselves, because we're just not in this, like, you know. And I put my hand up also, like my life's busy and I hold a lot, and sometimes I have to just say, I'm really sorry, but I just need to be there for myself right now. And it's one of the hardest things that I do.
It's so hard.
It's so hard. I'm a trustee of like 3 different foundations, and I run my own charity on top of running the studio and having my own business. Oof. And so sometimes I still, for some reason in my mind, don't feel good enough, or I don't feel like I do enough, or I like have this like, just like this inner voice, this inner child voice that says like, I need to do better, I need to do more. And me, I have to come in and protect myself at times. And, you know, it's a challenge. I'm not going to say I master it, but I'm here trying.
Hey, seems like you're doing really well from my perspective. So
I think that what you said is so relatable, because I think we all feel that.
Yeah.
You know, but definitely would never, ever think that about you. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, I've had enough of it, to be honest. I've had enough of like this like projection of like these, you know, gurus like that like, oh, I do this and I do that and I do this and I do that. And it's like, that looks like a lot. Yeah, right. You must have a team, you know?
Yeah.
Right. And so, and a lot of them do have teams. So then like a lot of us like feel like, oh my God, well, why am I not producing all that content? Why am I not putting all of that stuff out there? How can I not do all of those things? And it's just like basically just being honest and saying that like life is a lot, and be kind to yourself. Really, like sometimes I get annoyed with the wellness industry, because I think it's like perpetuating some neurosis in people.
Agree.
And like we didn't even touch on the wise woman way of healing, which is like basically the principle behind my work.
Oh my gosh, we need to talk about it. Yeah.
This form of cleansing seems very different from this modern very rigid approach to cleansing. So how did all of this come about and come to be?
Yeah, so I like to think of it as a feminine approach to cleansing. We see in the modern world like this very sort of like masculine, heroic approach to wellness. And, you know, it's incredible. It really does get us very far, and we can like push ourselves to very like incredible limits. But this feminine approach, I really feel like, you know, we talk about in modern days, like the rise of the feminine, the way of coming back to ourselves, of having compassion. And there's an idea around like what's called the wise woman way of healing. And the wise woman way of healing is about nourishing our bodies, about giving it everything it needs, about taking in deeply looking after our root and helping us to feel safe. And when we feel safe, that naturally everything that we don't need will let go and we will open up. And that's where the ever unfolding healing happens, that it doesn't come through force and strength and determination, but real lasting healing comes from feeling safe and held. And that's really the feminine approach to cleansing.
I think it's like awareness between the masculine approach and the feminine approach, because it kind of seems like maybe sometimes there's a place for a masculine approach, but
100%.
But maybe I'm kind of acknowledging and like scanning back, and maybe it's easy to get stuck there and to unknowingly like just stay in the, and so with this approach to just, it's like a gentle reminder of, hey, here's a different way.
Yeah.
Approach wellness.
It's like a loving and motherly way to treat your body and
exactly.
your spirit.
Yeah, we need a mother and we need a father. And there is times for both of them. And so, you know, like being able to enter into a feminine approach to cleansing allows us to feel safe and to do it on a more of a monthly rhythm. And then the masculine approach would come in on the solar rhythm. So that would come in four times a year, where you do a deeper cleanse, and it's a more structured, it's not so intuitive, it's like it has more of a schedule to it. Whereas the feminine approach is like our monthly check-in, our ability to listen to ourselves. So yeah, both of them are valid and both of them are important in our life, and it's about learning to move between the two with grace. Yeah,
so well said.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us for this episode.
We hope you gained some valuable insight and maybe learned something new.
If you enjoyed the show, please like, subscribe, and leave a review. And don't forget to follow us on social media at The Heart of Healing Show.
Till next time.
Mwah.